I think it will be way, way too little, way, way too late. But we may make some moves based upon what transpired yesterday with Republicans taking over the Senate and strengthening their position at the House and rejecting abomination. We may move to a saner energy policy. Keystone Pipeline construction may begin, but it's way too little too late. They may approve drilling in Anwar. I don't know if the Republicans have the character to do something like that. We may begin to drill more aggressively off the coast. We may continue fracking. There are lots of things we can do, and the other thing that we should be doing is continuing to have economic incentives, tax breaks, for renewable forms of energy, and they need to be streamlined in terms of being able to be deployed. But wind turbines and solar. We should also be expanding, and not just with our toe in the water, but in a very big way, nuclear. There's just so much that America could be doing to become energy independent. And becoming energy independent is not only a salvation for the economy at large and gives America, you know, at least a footing to stop being so economically bankrupt, but it also stops fueling Islamic terrorism. The other issue is whether or not there's a change in the way that this nation addresses Islamic terrorism. Glenn, what do you think? Do you think there's any chance whatsoever that the Republican Party will address the ongoing assault of Islamic terrorism in a more sane and rational way?
Potentially, not right away. I mean, I think right now we're going to have to deal with the damage that can be done in the remaining tenure of the existing Congress in their lame duck status, and as well as Obama's 2 years of lame duck status. And I don't see that changing immediately. They can try and make some moves, but it's kind of hard, you know, that we've bumbled in so deeply and so badly. They can try and start doing some damage control. If they're smart, they will. And if they resist that, then because if we have a Republican Congress for 2 years and they screw it up, then the backlash back to the Democrats in 2016 will be even worse. So we don't.
I would say that the only thing that could happen internationally that could be fortuitous is that a Republican Senate is going to make it very difficult for Obama to continue to be overtly hostile to Israel. And at this point, Obama has actually threatened Netanyahu with the removal of the U.S. veto in the Security Council so that, you know, the United Nations is overtly anti-Semitic. And Obama is anti-Semitic. And so he has threatened Netanyahu, says you either capitulate to his policy or he's going to withdraw the American veto in the Security Council. If Jordan, for example, just filed a claim against Israel. Muslims are running amok in Israel, and the Jordanians don't like the way the Jews are responding. And the United Nations will go along with the Islamic countries, and America has always just neutered them through the veto. But it's going to make it more difficult for Obama to impose his will against Israel with a Republican Senate, since the Senate is responsible for treaties.
Right. I wanted to mention we had a very ironic outcome here in Pennsylvania, which I'm not hearing mentioned on the mainstream media at all, and that is with regard to the National Congress in both houses, there was a, you know, windfall vote for, you know, a clear win for all the Republicans in the Congress. However, mm-hmm. Our incumbent Republican Governor Tom Corbett did not get reelected. He was ousted by the liberal tax and spend Tom Wolf, who's been promising corporate taxes and money for schools and such things, which is very ironic. I mean, I actually don't know enough about what's been going on in my own state's politics to understand why that happened, except it must be viewed as like a referendum against Tom Corbett himself, you know. against.
Yeah, I think the Republicans did run some very lame candidates, like the candidate that the Republicans ran in the state of Virginia against Mark Warner. I mean, I listened to the guy make a few comments in the news relative to the election. I mean, he's really just a clown. It's just an absolute clown. And so I think there's some Democrats that prevailed largely because the Republican candidate was such an idiot. But Tom Wolf is actually the only Democratic candidate that had Obama raise money for him and campaign for him that prevailed. He's the only one. Every other candidate that Obama campaigned on behalf of and raised money for lost.
Yeah, I even got an automated call from Bill Clinton backing Wolf.
It's amazing he'd be popular.
Well, the taxes are going to go. I mean, I can't wait to see, you know, if this guy, what he does and what happens with taxes at the state level, because he's got no choice but to up the taxes to come through with all he promised, you know.
Well, if you were in California, Brown, who is extraordinarily liberal, he'd win re-election. Both the California senators, Boxter and Feinstein, they would have won re-election. California, is an oasis of liberalism now, particularly because of the rise of the Hispanic community, and it's impervious, I think, to Republicans prevailing.
He'd probably run away with it in Minnesota, too.
Yeah, Minnesota's another one of those extraordinarily liberal places where, as a Republican candidate, there's no reason to even run. And the only elections that matter are the Democratic primaries.
I thought the resurgence of Jerry Brown was kind of almost amusing. I mean, Davis took a whipping. I mean, it's the space cadet Jerry Brown coming back in. I mean, I remember back in the days
Governor
of
Moonbeam,
spaceship Earth and all that. Yeah.
Yeah, Governor Moonbeam. Yeah, he's. It is truly amazing. But again, in California, there is, if you are the Democrat, you're going to prevail. I mean, there was a fascination with Schwarzenegger there for a while because of Gray out to Davis, and his management of energy policy in the state was so devastating, and the deficits were so devastating. And so you got Schwarzenegger because of the, governator and how cute all that was. But California has gone right back to its roots. It's overwhelmingly Democratic and liberal.
Well, Schwarzenegger was kind of scary, obviously. But one last thing on energy policy. I'm old enough to remember when gas was $29.9 a gallon, and I'm filling up yesterday. I'm supposed to be grateful now that it dipped under $3 a gallon. It's like, yep, we do need energy policy reform.
You look at the old pumps, and the old pumps, the maximum they could charge was $9.99. I mean, that's gas was in the range of 20 to 25 cents a gallon, and they could charge a total for a fill-up of $9.99. I mean, you pull an SUV now or a large car into a gas station, you're putting 20 gallons in it at, right now the price of gas has fallen appreciably. It's right in the 270 range pretty much across the country. But
affordable.
That's more than 10 times what it was when I was growing up. But it's still half of what it was 2 years ago.
Yeah. My dad used to work at my grandfather's Esso station back in the late 50s, and I remember him talking about gas being under a dime.
What's so funny is that because the oil companies used LIFO accounting, that when the prices fall, their profits fall, and they fall appreciably. And when prices go up because of LIFO, they
their profits
they'll go up quite as much, but there is a abnormal gain during that period. And it's amazing how politicians and the media are all screaming, Exxon made X, they're gouging, and look at this amount of profit. It's ungodly. It's unconscionable. But yet when the gas and oil prices go down, no one says a word.
Right. Right. Well, it's interesting. When crude prices go up, the gasoline, it's already been paid for. It's already in the tanks on the ground. The price on that goes up. It's already been paid for. And when the prices come down, if the crude comes down, the price, the lowering of the price is much slower to hit the pump.
But the fact of the matter is that you're either using LIFO or FIFO accounting. Yeah. It's an accrual-based accounting system. LIFO is last in, first out. FIFO is first in, first out. And it really just depends on which accounting system you have chosen. You have to be consistent. You can't go back and forth. And there's one of the accounting systems that's beneficial when prices are going up. The other one is beneficial when prices are going down. But what they're doing is they're repricing their inventory based upon either the last purchase or the last sale. It's a federal part of the general accounting practices that you have to choose one of the two. Either one's acceptable, but all inventory is either priced on a LIFO or FIFO basis, and that's what causes the anomaly when prices go up of crude or when they go down. And, of course, just no one wants to talk about it when they go down. Everyone squawks and, more taxes when they go up. And, of course, the whole issue is if you were to remove the entire profit margin of the big oil companies in the delivery of gasoline, rather than the price going down at the pump, it would go up at the pump. Now, they're averaging about 5% to 6% gross margin. And you'd say, well, I'd like to have that. But if you took away the 5% to 6% gross margin and removed the incentives of private industry to perform efficiently in terms of the distribution and refining and sale of petroleum, the price would double. If you had a not-for-profit government utility managing gas, the price would double.
One of our listeners on Facebook brought up a good point. What do you think happens to the gas prices now that the elections are over? I mean, usually...
the elections, they have no influence over gas prices at all. The price of gas is really an issue of supply and demand. And when there is... If the Syrian war, for example, were taking place in Saudi Arabia, gas prices would go up. But Saudi Arabia has large gas reserves. Syria does not. It's really a world function. It is true that an election has no influence on commodity prices in the short term. There are things that a Republican Congress can do, should they be signed by the White House, that can have a profound influence on energy prices, gasoline prices, in the long term. For example, if the Keystone Pipeline was built and functional, gas prices would drop appreciably. If we were more aggressive in fracking, gas prices would drop somewhat. Fracking only works when gas prices are high and does not work when they're not, because there's added expense in putting steam, water, underground. If we were to change our drug policy such that Mexico was not a war zone, since we import so much oil from Mexico, in addition, of course, to the oil we receive from Canada, which would benefit from the Keystone Pipeline. But in Mexico, if we changed our drug policy, which kept Mexico from being a war zone, it would have a significant effect favorable on lowering gas prices. If we rescinded many of the penalties we've imposed inappropriately on British Petroleum for the Halliburton mistake associated with the Deepwater Horizon rig, gas prices would fall appreciably. If we gave access to drilling to the leaseholders along the East Coast, Gulf, and California coast, gas prices within probably 2 years, that would be the fastest return, would fall appreciably. If we granted drilling rights in Anwar, in probably 3 years, gas prices would fall appreciably. So those are the things that can be done in terms of federal regulation that would free up free enterprise to increase supply, which with supply increased, the price will go down appreciably. And in addition to that, we would stop funding Islamic terrorism in the process. So there's lots of things that we can do that would be productive. Continuing just to review some of the editorials on the election, this particular person writing for USA Today says that in Arkansas, for example, Democrat Senator Mark Pryor, who was voted out, was ranked by the National Journal as smack dab. That's a real profound journalistic term, but again, she was writing for USA Today, which is written, I think, to an eighth grader. Smack dab in the middle of the Senate ideologically, with the 53rd most liberal voting record in 2013. He lost Tuesday to a conservative Republican challenger, Tom Cotton. Yeah, that's right. So, Democrats are out. Republicans are in. The nation voted far more conservatively, which means that they want less government. They want less intrusion in their lives. They're not pleased with the NSA. They're not pleased with the CIA. They're not pleased with the Department of Homeland Security. They're not pleased with the porous borders. They're not pleased with the never-ending wars overseas. They're not pleased with the economy. And Obama, who has had little success since his reelection 2 years ago in persuading the divided Congress to pass anything significant, has seen his political standing further weakened by the Republicans' attacks and Democrats' distancing. He's not had anything passed because what he wants is incompatible with what's in the best interest of Americans. While a president's party typically loses ground in midterm elections, Obama and the Democrats Tuesday reached an unwanted record, the biggest losses in the House and Senate for any two-term president in modern times. The rebuke was enormous. Sorry there, Ms. Liberal Journalist. The next 2 years will look a lot like the wrangling of the past 4 years, predicts Larry Jacobs, director of the Center of Study of Politics and Governance at the University of Minnesota, which they're in your neck of the woods. Scott, quote, more of the same, but even more so. It's going to be even more bitter partisan white-knuckle politics. That's not true. It's just not true. I mean, right now what you have is a House that passes legislation that doesn't even get considered in the Senate. And you have the president wanting to pursue a legislative agenda that doesn't even get considered in the House. At least now, with the two of the three bodies unified, you are going to actually get legislation passed in the House that will be considered and passed in the Senate and brought to the president's desk. You're going to have the opportunity for governance. The Obaminator spent an enormous amount of time, and I know because I am reminded every time that he travels in Air Force One that it's an area of the country that I can't fly through because they shut down the airspace. And he spent an enormous amount of money, of taxpayer money, on Air Force One, flying to fundraisers on behalf of Democratic candidates. Virtually every one of them lost, even though they outspent the Republicans. There was one senatorial election, I think it was in North Carolina, that the seat cost over $100 million. There's something tragically wrong with a nation and its politics where a state election costs over $100 million. The president, however, wasn't the only national high-profile loser out there. Former Secretary of State Hillary Rotten Clinton did 45 events for 26 candidates. Only 11 of the 26 candidates won. So she was the plague of death. One Republican in particular, who was not about to let Clinton get away with such an unsuccessful record in the 2014 elections, was Senator Rand Paul, the Republican of Kentucky, who made it personal when he tweeted, "You didn't think it could get any worse than your book tour." Well, it did, courtesy of the U.S. voters. He linked to a Facebook page that shows Clinton campaigning for, and sometimes arm-in-arm, with six Democratic Senate candidates and incumbents who lost on Tuesday with the damning hashtag Hillary's losers. Another review article on the melee that took place, the massacre of tax and spend that roiled over America last night, reads, "While the GOP came out on top in today's national vote, there was good news and bad news for both parties, relatively speaking. In today's election, according to CBS's exit polls, overall the Republicans' advantages abounded. Concerns about terrorism, read Islam, healthcare, read Obamacare, and the economy, or read lack thereof, all provided voters, particularly Republicans, with a national advantage. Among the nearly half of voters who said that the health care law went too far, 83% of those supported the Republican candidates. And there are very few aspects of Obamacare that are beneficial. And it is overwhelmingly negative. And those who realize that voted 83% against the Democrats, 83% in favor of the Republicans. Those who are worried about terrorism, Islam, 71% of the voters also gave the GOP candidates a vote because, after all, Barack Hussein Obama is pro-Islam. And 58% to 40% for Democrats on the Islamic question. Neither party can come away from the election totally happy, according to this editorial. Both suffer from low brand images at the moment. No, not at the moment. Forever. 53% of voters said that they have an unfavorable image of the Democratic Party. A statistically equal 54% said that they view the Republican Party unfavorably. The party's leaders fare no better. One-third of voters said that they are disappointed with the Obama administration, and another quarter said that they were angry, for a total of 59% between disappointed and angry, who view the administration negatively. Republicans in Congress are in a similarly bad situation, with 37% of voters saying that they are disappointed in the GOP congressional leaders, and an additional 23% expressed anger at them. Well, maybe Boehner can get George W. Bush to punch them in the nose. Voters going to the polls today were very pessimistic about the state of the U.S. economy, according to all exit polls. 71% of the voters in exit polls said that the economy was either bad or very bad. Wow.
But wait,
78%. Yes.
Isn't Obama taking claim for like some economic boom that's going on? I'm pretty sure I've seen some stories where he's making a claim.
Ain't no economic boom.
Europe
is in a tailspin. Russia's in a tailspin because of abomination. You've got government gobbling up a larger percentage of the gross domestic product in America. You've got the only reason that unemployment isn't through the roof is most people that have been out of jobs for a long time are no longer looking for jobs. The wholesale price index took a real hit this past month. No, the economy is in shambles, and it's in shambles largely because it's being governed by a communist. This is a bad situation we find ourselves in. That's why the overwhelming preponderance of Americans, 78%, were very or somewhat worried about the future direction of the economy. We don't have businessmen in the Senate. We have so destroyed the perception of business that it's almost impossible for a businessman or woman to prevail. And the one thing that our federal government could do is to, that would be positive, is to free enterprise. We would solve so many problems in this country if the people making policy made policy with a sound understanding of economics and business. Well, despite improving unemployment statistics, and they're only improving because people have stopped looking for jobs, and recent evidence of economic growth, we don't have any. You know, the last report was dismal. And the journalist so badly wants to spin Obamanation as positive. You know, it was dismal. Only 33% of voters believe that the economy is getting better. Perhaps the best indicator of this deep-seated pessimism is that almost half of voters expect the life for the next generation of Americans to be considerably worse than it is today. And that is true. Only 22% think that it'll be better. They're the ones that voted in favor of legalizing marijuana. The picture does not look any better for the personal. Yes.
Go ahead. About the economy and energy policy, one notable thing that occurred just last week is the United Nations issued its Tissue of Life statement about anthropogenic climate change and the need to urgently do something about that. Now, if that's used as a cue by the Obama administration to use a lame duck session to ram through a carbon tax and give lots of money to Al Gore and his buddy Blood and start sending money into that, you know, or that company, you know, that's not going to help the economy much. And so between Obamacare and...
He can't get it done. The reason he can't get it done is that that would require a favorable vote of the House of Representatives in addition to the Senate, in addition to the White House's sponsorship. And there is a 0% chance that...
Why does he have a pen and a phone? What's he need that for?
Yeah, no, there's a 0% chance that... first of all, that it cannot be passed without congressional approval, and there is no chance whatsoever that even the Democrats that are outbound from the Senate would vote in favor of it. So, the carbon tax has no chance of passage. And what the carbon tax does is demonstrate the point that I've been trying to make for years, which is that the global warming myth has nothing to do with the environment. It has everything to do with socialistic, communist governance and redistribution of wealth. That it penalizes success, it rewards failure, and those in the middle that are determining from whom the money is taken and to whom that it is given not only empower themselves but enrich themselves. And that is the entire purpose. I'm sitting here, by the way, on the East Coast, cold, and it's going to get much colder because we're, you know, last year was the coldest winter on record in America. And, you know, we are batting down the hatches. It's going to get really cold here again on the East Coast. There are places in the East Coast that it's already snowed. It snowed just recently in Boston. The reality is that global warming is a hoax, particularly man-made global warming. We are in a 600-year warming period. It began around 1850. That's why the glaciers have retreated. It's one of, you know, every 600 years, the Earth warms. Every 600 years, the Earth cools. It's been on that kind of a cycle for millions of years, having nothing to do with man. And
lie about it. That's what's amazing. They're willing to lie about that. Well,
what's so odd about that, Glenn, is that in the midst of this warming cycle, the warming cycle commenced as it could have easily been predicted around 1850, but about 16, 17, 18 years ago, the warming trend that is a natural part of this cycle stopped. And we now have a cooling period in the middle of the warming period, which is really unusual for a significant period of years, 16, 17 years.
We could end up in a Maunder minimum ice age, actually.
Man is now having an effect on the planet, but it's not warming. It's cooling. And,
a lot of our activity is throwing
debris up in the atmosphere, and it's reflecting light away. There's a possibility. But, you know, at this point, even though man is having an effect, and the effect is cooling, not warming, in the midst of this warming period, for us to have no change for 16 or 17 years means that we're having a chilling effect. But even when you look at it, not only is the antithesis of what the socialist politicos are saying, we're not in a position where we can resolve it.
Man may be contributing
to cooling, but we can't resolve it.
Bear in mind, we're not contributing that much. I mean, a few good volcanoes dwarf man's influence.
But volcano is like a lot of man's activity. There's a plus and a minus. The smoke from the volcano, dense enough, throws the Earth into a decided cooling period. And there's a lot of reflection of the sun's light from a volcano eruption, while the carbon, you know, produces warming. So there's some offsets. Welcome back to Shattering Mist. We're talking about the upheaval in America, where the majority of those who voted yesterday voted against the existing U.S. government and its policies, which was at least good to hear. Of course, I'd much prefer people not vote at all. Kirk, what's your take on what transpired yesterday?
Well, I keep it with a backdrop of knowing what Yahweh reported we were actually going to do, but it was somewhat encouraging, but, you know, you can't, I'm like the rest of the 78% of the people, I can't trust them either, so I wouldn't think they're ever going to do the right thing in the long run anyhow, because they're self-interested.
I would say that the 78 to 80% of Americans who recognize that both political parties are rotten, that both political leaders are rotten, that the U.S. government is way out of kilter, and that we have major problems that perhaps can't even be resolved in this country. Well, I would agree with all of that. I am absolutely certain that the bums that were voted in are going to be at best marginally better than the bums that were voted out.
Yes. Well, but just, you know, that's kind of okay. It slows it down. Like they hadn't destroyed Damascus yet, but they're certainly working on it. You know, it's one of those.
Yeah, I think what it does is it. If I were to look at the world at large, I think that the Republicans are no better in terms of deploying America's military, and that is counterproductive. Every time we deploy our military at this point, it is counterproductive, particularly in the world of Islam. I don't think that changes one iota.
No.
Republicans are typically more hawks, hawkish. So I think, if anything, that bears worse for the militaristic nature of America, which is why I was so condemning of America militarily. But the place that God cares about the most, of course, is Israel. And the Republicans have consistently been more supportive of Israel than the Democrats, and it couldn't be any worse than Obama. He is somewhat neutered in what he can do against Israel as a result of this vote, because he's lost all of his credibility and prestige.
But that's a good thing. Yeah, it is, but in light of the growing anti-Semitism, that's a short-lived thing anyway. I mean,
correct.
You want it to be. You want it to last a long time, or you want them to change their views.
But Kirk, we're not talking about a long time on anything. I mean,
no.
We're in 2014, and 2026 is we start the tribulation. So we don't really have a long time on anything. We've only got 12 more years. But what it does is 12 years is still a fair amount of time before Israel is dissected its waste. Yes. And made so vulnerable that we engage in World War III and the Magog War. That's still 12 years away. And so if the Obaminator continued to push Israel into a suicidal position, then we would never make it 12 more years.
No, no. Does this kill Hillary Clinton's chance for election?
No, I don't think so.
What a shame.
I wish it did, but you see, the way that America works now is you've got the two most populous states where Republicans don't even bother to campaign.
Oh.
And with the Electoral College for the presidency, it's not like there's going to be a difference if the Republicans lose California by 5% or 15%. So there won't even be any advertisements. And so the Democratic candidate is going to get all of the electoral votes of California and New York. So anybody in California and New York who votes for other than the rotten one, their vote's not going to count.
Yeah.
And you're almost in the same position now with Illinois and with Ohio, and you're getting in the same position with Florida and Virginia, and you are in that position with Maryland. There's a number of large states where all of the electoral votes are almost mandated at this time for the Democrat. And so it puts that's the kind of thing you got to be really careful of statewide elections versus the president is the Electoral College and the trends that have swept through the largest states, making it very difficult for a Republican to carry the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And Kirk, you may agree, but personally, I think if you have a Republican Congress and a Republican Senate, the worst right. thing that could happen is to have a Republican president.
Exactly.
Yeah. We very seldom do the right thing. You look at the Bush years. We spent ourselves into oblivion and created deficits that, you know, are going to deprive our children of all opportunity.